B-Pod Studios.
Felger.
I don't know, guys. Am I going to play? Am I not going to play? What am I going to do?
Mass.
Yeah, Mass, you stupid. S-T-O-O. Stupid Mass.
It's time for Felger and Mass, presented by DraftKings on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, folks, once again, final hour. Felger and Mass here. It's a Reentry Monday brought to you by East Boston Savings Bank. And baseball's coming. Baseball is coming. We've got opening night on Thursday. We got the Red Sox opening up their season on Friday. And most importantly, we have the return of the baseball reporters tonight at 6 here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. That's when you know baseball is really back. Maz does the 6 to 7 hour. Murray thrilled about it for sure. Jimmy Stewart so thrilled about it, he decided to bag in. So I think the baseball reporter crew is ready to roll tonight at 6 o'clock. But a little preview here today during the regular 2 to 6 program. Maz, what's your lead thought on the Red Sox as we head into the season this week and you head into your show tonight?
Okay, so with regard to the Red Sox, I think the easy thing to do is do what Shaughnessy did over the weekend, do what people have done of late, which is say, boy, that pitching staff is wretched. And Tom and Quincy even said it in the last segment. Might be the worst pitching staff. Shaughnessy says this might be the worst pitching staff of his lifetime. I actually had a similar conversation with someone over the weekend where I said, and I even looked it up. I went so far as to look up, like, the teams of the early 80s. Those Red Sox teams pre-Clemens weren't very good. They were really, really ordinary. But you know what they had? Some good young pitching. Bruce Hurst, John Tudor, Bob Ojeda. You know, Oil Can was still around for some of that. And say what you will about those guys, but they were big league pitchers. This team doesn't have that. And yet, here's what I would tell you. There's no cop out here. Don't let the Red Sox skate. You don't get to just say, well, I'll write off the season and that's it. It's irrelevant. The pitching staff sucks. They're all done. In a 60-game schedule, they still have a chance. And in a 60-game schedule with their lineup, they can absolutely make some noise. And if Nathan Eovaldi gets hot for a little while or Eduardo Rodriguez comes back and gets hot, and I think he might be, call it a week behind, 10 days behind, we'll see where it is. But again, it's a short season. I'm not giving them an easy out on this one. I don't think that's the right thing to do. There's too much invested in the team, too much payroll invested in the roster to just say, okay, that's it. It's the year of a pandemic. Let's just throw it out the window, play the 60 games, cash the checks, and go home. No way. There's still enough there for them to make a little noise and to compete and contend and again, and make a run at a playoff spot. Do I expect them to win a championship? No. But do I expect them to play competitively and maybe sneak into the playoffs if they get lucky? Sure. Absolutely. That is not beyond them. They don't get to just write that off. No.
You said that to you it feels like organizationally there's a sense that they've mailed it in. I'm just reading your email. It goes back to the Mookie trade, the firing of Cora. You've just sort of talked about this stuff. But you say now the pandemic. It feels like nobody wants the season over more than they do, more than they slash we do. So, you know, that's been the way the team's been managed. Have you sensed any of that from the players?
No, I mean, not vocally, but I would tell you that Eduardo Rodriguez not coming in ready to go worried me. Like, that's a bad sign. And I would say the same thing about Rafael Devers. And I know that, you know, there were people who reached out to me from Fenway Park when we were talking about the speculation that Devers was out of shape and that's why he was at a Boston College. First of all, that whole thing showed up in a story by Peter Abraham of the Globe. Okay, so it's not like we made it up. And my guess is Abraham got an earful about it, too. But you know what? Part of me thinks he put it in there for a reason. And in the video that I saw, I don't want to say Devers was fat, but he didn't look like he was in great shape. Now people have told me he looks the same as he did at the end of last year. It always cracked me up when I covered the team, Mike, that guys would say, hey, he looks the same as he does a year ago. And I would say, no, he doesn't. He looks fatter. Like, what are you guys talking about? What are you looking at? So I always wonder about that because I think there's always a bit of propaganda when it comes to guys being in shape. But the bottom line is this. Devers and Eduardo Rodriguez are two of the youngest and most important players on the team. And they are critical guys for the future of the Red Sox as well as the present. So if they show up this year and they're lackluster, not motivated, disinterested, what does that tell you? Isn't that a bad sign?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and again, I say for the long term as well as the short. You don't want to put a premium on the short term. Don't put a premium on the short term. Put it on the long. So if you have guys that are critical parts of your future and they come in and they're unmotivated and they want to flush the season down the toilet, that's okay?
No, of course not. Of course not.
So this is what I'm saying. Yeah, and I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, finish.
I just think that there are, you know, that those little tells to me early on with Devers and Rodriguez really bothered me. I can't tell you how much they bothered me because they're cornerstone guys now, and particularly this season. And so I sort of got the sense that they were, we'll see how it goes. Yeah, we got to show up and play. We traded our best player. Chris Sale's hurt. We have no real shot. AC got fired. You know, blah, 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 blah. And that they're just willing to accept the fact that the whole year can get flushed. And to me, that bugs the crap out of me. Independent of whether or not there are fans in the stands, it's time to play. They're having the season. Let's go show up and try to make some noise.
Okay, so we began with some baseball today. We can end it with some baseball today. But your call's really on whatever. We did Bruins. We did quarterback competition with Stidham and Newton earlier. More reporting on that over the weekend. So whatever you want. There's a couple open lines at 617-779-0985. Join us, why don't you? Here's Trevor in the car on MLB. Hi, Trevor.
Hey, guys. What's going on? I think, like you guys, I could have cared less if baseball came back. But now that it's here, I'm excited about it. But I also think you'd sort of appreciate my negative point of view on MLB in that, you know, I hope they don't get a pass from the standpoint that they got to be coming off one of their worst off seasons in regards to the cheating scandal with the Astros, certainly what happened here locally. And then you add into the fact of, you know, there's got to be other teams that have players fat and happy who are showing up like some of our guys. And it's going to be really, really interesting to see how they can't hide behind that 160-game excuse, whether you go out and have a bad start or if you have a couple bad nights. It's going to be really interesting to see how these players react when they got to be held accountable much more often than they used to.
Yeah, you know, more urgency, which, you know, I'm excited for. Sport needs it desperately. Maz needs more urgency. We've talked about this a bunch. Now you can't, you know, those B-side games that they like to throw out on travel days, getaway days, things like that. You really can't do that this year. I don't think you'll be able to do that this year. I mean, that's just one example of it. So that urgency, I think we're all looking forward to. And another point that he made there, you know, there are teams out there that the Sox are going to be playing that are going to have a throwaway season. I mean, now those, how many games do they have against the Jays? Do they play 10 times against the division?
I believe that's right, yep.
So those 10 games against the Jays, the Jays aren't going to be in Toronto. They're going to be living out of a suitcase. You know, what's that squad going to look like by the time you get there? That's to the Red Sox advantage.
Well, and to me, that's the pivotal team. So is Toronto. And I mean that pivotal team from the Red Sox standpoint. Because the Yankees are better. The Rays are better. They're better than the Red Sox. They were last year when the Red Sox had healthier bodies and more bodies. So I think those teams are better, and you're going to have to play 500 against those teams, and you're going to have to beat up on the Orioles and then the Blue Jays. And so the Blue Jays are sort of that swing team in the division this year, I think, where it could go either way. Toronto has some good young talent. They signed Ryu from the Dodgers to be at the front of that rotation. You know, still have Stroman. So, you know, there are guys there on that Toronto team that you say, okay, that's an intriguing team. Like if Toronto were to be that team that over 60 games went 35-25, you'd say, well, not totally surprising. You could see that one coming. So to me, that's the team the Red Sox are going to have to beat. Tampa, too, to a degree. I just think the Yankees are clearly superior this year to all those teams in the division. If the Yankees don't win the division, even in 60 games, it's a huge failing for the Yankees. But the Red Sox, those Toronto games especially, oh, those are going to determine their fate, Mike.
Overall, Mass, you start to feel it a little bit this weekend?
Look, I do because, yeah, I admit it, that once I start to see the highlights of the scrimmages and the, you know, the exhibitions between big league teams, whether it's the Yankees and the Mets and the ball flying out of the ballpark, or Cody Bellinger hitting a grand slam, or Shohei Ohtani on the mound and being able to pitch.
Stop it, Maz. You like that Stanton went deep. And again, we're showing video of Maz's reaction to Giancarlo Stanton's first home run as a Yankee a couple of years ago, or whenever the hell this was.
From a better time.
Yeah, right. Murray, a simpler, more innocent time where you could really get jacked up over an opening day home run from Giancarlo Stanton. But, Mass, you watched the Yankees last night hit like 8 home runs in their exhibition against the Mets. Let's face it.
Okay, but so look, that's part of it. And I admit that the Yankees are obviously probably the most important franchise in all of baseball, if not the most, one of a couple. So when it happens in New York and it happens with that team, there is sort of a, you know, not to mention the giants they have on the roster between Stanton, the Adonis, as we know him, and Aaron Judge absolutely clubbing the ball. Like, it's a fun team to watch. They're an intimidating team. And so, yes, it caught my eye, but I'll tell you too, I love Otani. I love Bellinger. Like, there are some players in the big leagues that I look at and I say, okay, that guy makes me watch. And Otani's one of them. He's back on the mound again. I find that interesting. Okay. And Cody Bellinger, you know, had a real breakout year. I think he's one of the real bright young talents in the game. And the Dodgers obviously have a lot at stake too. Like I did, I started to feel it a little bit in the last 24 hours. And the closer you get to the opener, that opening game is a great one. I mean, it's a, you know, Yankees Nationals defending world champions against a team that's gotten or had gotten more hype in the preseason than anyone else. I mean, that's a good matchup on opening night. That's an NFL type of opener. The okay. Nationals and the Yankees, and that's a game to look forward to.
Don't know if you can feel it, but a slight movement. We've had slight movement for baseball here on Felger and Maz. When's the last time you could say that? Any movement from you, Murray?
No.
Okay. But you can catch Murray tonight on the Baseball Reporter starting at 6. I promise. Your call's next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You can listen to Felger and Mass on your phone with the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
Frankly, it's what we deserve. We're a nation of idiots.
Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
That one's driven to left field and deep. Going back, Cespedes. He's on the track. He's at the wall. See ya! A home run for Judge. And the Yankees take a 1-0 lead.
They have a lot of guys in the back end of that bullpen that can fill in. And that is your injury report brought to you by Montefiore doing more.
Oh, Gary Sanchez did more. He just crushed a pitch into the second deck in left field as the Yankees take a 2-0 lead. Wow, did he hit that. That one's driven deep to left field. Going back, Smith, track, wall, see ya! A 2-run home run for Judge. The Bronx Bombers are out tonight. It is 5-0 Yankees. And he does. Oh, he crushed it. See ya! Oh, into the bleachers. A monster shot by Giancarlo Stanton. And it's 6-0 Yankees.
All right, so that was last night. Empty stadium, Mets, Yankees, these little tune-up exhibitions. Michael Kay on the call there from Yes Network. Fake crowd noise, not too bad. Not too bad. It, you know, I felt they potted it up a little bit after the home runs, but you know, while it was actually happening, I didn't really notice it. And I, you know, I felt like, you know, I've watched some different teams and different sort of exhibitions. I think some teams are a little more obvious with the fake crowd noise than others. And, you know, for me, the less the better. Murray, you still need it, though. After listening to that, you know you need it.
Absolutely. And, it, you know, like, I didn't watch that, but hearing it, it's, I think they've done a good job. Like, the fake crowd noise, I think it sounds good given the weird circumstances that these games are being played in. Every sport that I've heard it. It hasn't been overboard. I think they've done a really good job. Sometimes it's a little high in the mix, but that was good. And those of you, Mike, that dislike it, I just feel like, especially when it comes to baseball, I feel like you don't realize how much, how brutal it would be.
Dead?
Yeah. Like, I mean, so I take Chris Gasper's word for it, too. He was there at that first inter-squad scrimmage for the Red Sox a few Thursdays ago, and he's like, oh, if you think baseball's, like, tough to watch sometimes with fans in the park, try it without. Like, I just think you wouldn't realize how boring it would be without it. So I think they're better off pumping in the fake crowd noise. I really do, especially when it comes to baseball.
Now that Murray says it, this is where I think you'll really notice the absence of emotion from the players. Like, you know, the whole idea that you're supposed to just play and not, you know, express yourself, and the game is brutally boring without it. So, like, especially now, the way they play it now. So I just think that this is another, maybe knowing that the answer is no, baseball won't learn anything from it. But you'd like to think that during a time like this, they recognize the value of intensity and energy.
All right, phones, as promised. Zach in Milford on the Sox. Go ahead, Zach.
Anthony, two words to describe the Red Sox pitching rotation. Give you a hint, two of your favorite words used on the Felger Maserati program.
Suck and blow.
And blows. Thank you. Anthony, I love Eovaldi, maybe as a fourth starter, third starter. Perez, great depth option. Maybe you could pitch a Pawtucket or Worcester if that was going to happen. Where are the innings pitch going to come from, Tony?
So, Zach, look, you know, the whole innings pitch thing is less of a factor when you're talking about 60 games. So you can spread it out among your bullpen. You can do it in a lot of ways. I'm not worried about the innings. I'm worried about the quality. Like the high end, the guy that can go out there and just win every time he's on the mound, that's what they don't have. The innings, I mean, in 60 games, it's 12 starts. Those, you know, if you get guys that can go five innings, you're fine. But I'm not sure they have the guys that can go five innings.
Cam and Taunton waiting patiently with the Bruins thought. Go ahead, Cam. You're up next with Felger and Maz here on a reentry Monday brought to you by East Boston Savings Bank. Go ahead.
Yeah, with Pastrnak, and I was relieved to hear from his agent that he doesn't have the virus. But, I mean, for guys, you're playing under – I mean, is there any doubt in your mind that throughout these 4 months that Zdeno Chara was doing one-legged, one-armed pull-ups with both of his kids hanging off over his legs,
for God's sake?
And then as soon as he got word the facility was back open, he drove back up here from – he's playing with Zdeno Chara and Patrice Bergeron, and even Marchand, his silliness. He still cares about the game as a committed pro when it comes to actually, you know, caring about the game. Those are as committed and as professional people I've ever seen in this town. And Pastrnak comes in, and he's not ready to go. You know, Murray said this – it's Sagan-ish, for crying out loud. You are one of the faces of the league, man, and one of the face of the team and the future of the Bruins organization. It's up to you to be ready to go, dude. What the hell?
I'm with you, Cam. I'm with you. And I think the team's a little frustrated too. And I guess that. I don't know that. But my guess is, you know, if you just really read between the lines there of some of the things Sweeney has said, I think they're expressing that, you know, frustration that I think they're justified in feeling. They got a chance to win the cup. They're the freaking favorites to win the cup, for crying out loud. And they know this date on the schedule's there for weeks, months. And still, Pastrnak doesn't show up in time to quarantine properly or train with the team instead of, you know, at some random rink. I mean, I'd be frustrated. That was all within Pastrnak's control. We've got David in New Bedford. He's up next with a Red Sox thought. Hi, David.
Yes, I think the lineup is going to be pretty good, but I agree the pitching is not going to be that great. I wondered what your thoughts are on how many wins do you think the Red Sox will actually win this year. Thank you.
Okay, David. Maz, you said the Vegas over-under was 28.5?
Yeah, 28.5. I'm basing on what a caller said earlier, but that sounds about right. I'd put it, you know, pretty close to 30, right around 500.
28.5. 28.5, Murray, over-under.
Probably over, just to spite me. And there's the other thing I already know that's going to happen with this team this year, given their horrendous pitching staff, and that the lineup's going to be good. Night after night of 9-8, 10-7, and four-plus hours. And so that's, you know, it'll be nice that it's going to be back, because I'm going to tune in to root against them, because they don't deserve to have a good season given the offseason, so I'll have that. But I'll tell you, it won't take long for me to be like, oh, Jesus, I can't do this. Like, and now it's, like, quiet, and they're still playing these four-hour effing games because the pitching stinks, and you're going to have, like, two-hour innings where it's like, oh, whoa, they've put up five runs this inning, and it's just taking their time because guys are still going to be taking their time on the mound and looking in and telling you right now, these games by this team in particular are going to be brutal.
You guys said it earlier. You're going to see nothing but baseballs rattling around, ricocheting off empty seats in the bleachers at Fenway Park or whatever park, because the ball is going to be flying out of like that thing at Yankee Stadium last night. That's what every Red Sox game is going to be, Maz.
Well, look, again, you got a good lineup and a bad pitching staff. I mean, that's just got 10-9 written all over it. So now, or, you know, 12 to 6 or whatever it is, like those games the Red Sox played in London against the Yankees,
right,
where the ball was getting bashed all over the place and nobody could get anybody out. I mean, I think you're going to get some sort of scaled down version of that because the balls, I think, were juiced in London. So you're going to get a lot of that. And I mean, look, you know, I don't know what to tell you. If you're asking me what my prediction is, I don't feel great about it. I don't like the vibe around the team because honestly, it feels to me like it's very sort of dead. I don't think there's much energy coming out of there at all. And that worries me because it feels to me like, you know, that's got put a stamp on it and mail it in, written all over it.
Steve, in Portland on last night's Yankees scrimmage. Yes, Steve.
Yes, so they have a ridiculous stat comparing Gleyber Torres to like DiMaggio, Mantle. And for a sport that cherishes their rackets, do you think they'll ever get rid of the shift? I mean, why would you even bother trying to play small ball? Of course you're going to swing for the fences.
Okay, Steve, those are two way different topics. First thing, I mean, I just saw the highlight clip, but, you know, the Yes Network, Maz, gets as honky, and I don't mean like white guy. I mean like honk.
Yeah,
As
homerish.
As cheerleader honkish as any. If you ever watch it, it is pathetic. So it would not surprise me. I didn't hear it. I didn't see it, but it would surprise me not one bit if they were comparing Gleyber Torres to some of those guys. Not one bit.
So I'll tell you what I think is one of the great sort of misconceptions of in sports media, and that is the quote-unquote toughness of the New York media. Now, look, there are lots of good reporters in New York, and we all know who they are. Okay, so those guys that are around the team with some level of regularity, and I get it. But the electronic media in New York, particularly the TV people, holy crap. Like, talk about cheerleaders. Unbelievable. And for a city as big and accomplished as New York is, there has always been this little bit of a small town honky homer group that, you know, hovers around the team and asks questions like, what does it mean to you to be a member of the greatest franchise in the history of sports? And you're like, dude, would you put a sock in it? Because you sound like a freaking jackass. Like, seriously, quit kissing ass and ask the question.
So shifts, yes, I would love to see shifts being banned. Sorry, I remembered your second point. I would love to see shifts being banned. I think that the shifts have led to more launch angle. No one tries to hit the opposite way on the shift. They try and hit over the shift, and so now it just all leads to the walk, strikeout, home run, three true outcome nature of baseball, and I think that I would love to see them outlaw shifts and have an illegal defense. Most sports have some form of an illegal defense call. I don't know why you can't have that in baseball either. Sam in Pawtucket. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, guys. First time, long time. My first take was, what do you guys think if we have seen the last brawl in baseball? And if we have, is there going to be more people hit by pitches and more bat flips? And if so, I'm sorry.
So, you know what? I'd be disappointed if there were less brawls, but they're going to be. They're not going to brawl this year. You know, we said that, though, when they got back in Korea or the Asian leagues, and like the first or second night, there was that big brawl in Korea, which they don't even normally have. So it did happen, and sometimes you just can't control it. But unfortunately, I think on balance, this is not going to be part of the game.
And if it gets really bad, what you'll probably see is spitting like llamas.
Huh? Yeah, people spitting at each other, yeah. Right? I've heard that speculation too in the NFL, Murray. Like that linemen are going to start threatening to breathe on each other and spit at each other to try to get an edge while they're lining up for the snap. Like you could see all of that. I'll tell you though, what I am hoping is that some of that anger towards the Astros is still there and we get to see some fireworks.
What does that have to do with llamas?
Llamas spit at each other to try to show dominance over each other.
Yeah, that's how they combat.
Way. Yeah.
Oh, ew. Well, okay. We've got Andrew in Worcester. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hey, guys. I was just calling to see what you guys' thoughts are on Michael Chavis. Everybody's talking about how good the Sox lineup's going to be. I feel like it kind of depends on Michael Chavis. Last year he had a great year, and it's like he's going to have the same thing again.
So, Andrew, I don't know if you heard it, but Maz just made a noise at you. Go ahead.
Michael Chavis is the key to the team? Yeah, I think it's Vasquez.
Would
you stop with that? The key to the team is Devers, Martinez, Bogarts. That's the key to the team.
I think
if those guys are fine, they'll score.
Kevin Pillar is going to be good because his name sounds like Kevin Millar.
Wants to talk some baseball. Talk about a guy that's not normally brought up first in these conversations. You got to dump all over him like that. That ain't right.
Chavis, I forgot he was even on the team.
Speaking of dumping all over someone, Maz has a bone to pick with a certain golfer. Okay, so we'll get to that. We'll let Maz unburden himself of his golf thing. We'll take more of your calls. It is a Reentry Monday, so your last segment of your wonderful phone calls, anything that we've hit on today, 617-779-0985. But first, the very latest in the world of sports, there have been developments in terms of the NFL and their return to play. There is a development. There is breaking news on that. Murray, we'll give that to you right here, and then we're right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Doesn't know Felger and Mass.
Michael Felger, I don't know from a can of paint at all.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Phil, can you just walk us through the putt on 13? What was your mindset and why did you decide to putt from 78 yards?
So the reason I tried to putt was the fairway prior to the green was pitched more severely right to left. And if I used that slope, it was going to angle and get the ball working over to the left pin and possibly get close. Whereas if I hit a wedge shot and flown it onto the front edge or just short, I wasn't using that extra pitch or contour to get the ball over to the left. I would have had to settle for a good shot being 12 or 15 feet right of the hole. I didn't hit it hard enough, but if I had hit that hard enough or the right speed, I think that ball could have gotten close to the hole to tap in, whereas a wedge I didn't see as that being possible.
All right, so that's Phil Mickelson from his weekend at the Memorial. And it ticked Maz off. Maz, tell us what happened, first of all, and tell us why you're pissed off.
Okay, so the event was the Memorial, which is in Ohio. It's Jack Nicklaus's tournament. And I tell you that up front because the course conditions were very, very difficult over the weekend. In fact, it played very much like a major, even a U.S. Open. Guys couldn't keep the ball in the green. So all of that was going on. Mickelson's question and answer there pertained to a par four that he played in which he drove the ball to within 78 yards of the green. Okay, his drive on that hole was like 320 yards or something to that effect, and he had 78 yards to the green. And instead of hitting a wedge into the flag, he putted it. He putted the ball from 78 yards away. So again, I would like you to think about standing on a football field and standing on the 22-yard line and trying your own 22 and trying to putt to a hole that is in the opposite end zone. Okay, that's the putt that Mickelson was looking at. And he explained it afterward. You heard it there, talking about the contour of the green and, you know, the inability of the green to receive wedges, and the translation of which is blah, 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 blah. That's Phil Mickelson. So his answer to me tells me two things. One of two things. Either he was mocking the PGA for the course conditions, which I should also mention that he got to a par three short time after that. And laid up. Did you hear that?
Yes.
He
laid up on a par three. Yep.
He hit the ball 140 yards, left himself, I want to say, about 60 yards in, and then went in from there. Okay. He did not want to hit the ball at the pin. And then afterwards said that the hole has been kicking his ass for 2 weeks because they played the same course, albeit under different conditions, within the last couple of weeks. And so he wanted to play it differently and take a different approach. He bogeyed. It didn't work. But the bottom line is this. When Mickelson starts pulling these shenanigans, it's one of two things. Either he's whining like the crybaby he can be about the difficulty of the golf courses, which, if you remember, he did once at a U.S. Open where he putted the ball and it was going to go off the green and he ran over and hit it while it was still moving. Do you remember that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So this is not beyond Mickelson to whine like the little baby he is when things don't go his way. Or the second thing is, and this is also in play now, he is such a complete and total mental case that he doesn't know what the hell he's doing out there anymore. His putting stroke now for those who care about such things and who follow golf, he's now stopping at the height of his backswing on his putts.
No way.
So, like, you know, Charles Barkley comes halfway down with his swing and stops and then finishes it. Well, Mickelson goes back with his putter and then stops and then comes forward. Now, he claims all of this is, you know, and honestly, believe it or not, I'm going to take him at his word that this was all strategic, which tells me this guy has lost his marbles. And I'm starting to see this from more than one golfer. I think they're starting to crack. I think these guys are losing it. That amid COVID, with everybody's routines disrupted and who knows what else, I think golfers are starting to lose their minds and they're starting to crack.
Well, you had another example. You had a bone to pick with Bryson DeChambeau.
Okay, so, and this relates to DeChambeau, for those who didn't see it. The cut at the Memorial over the weekend was +3. DeChambeau was in line to make the cut. He then got a 10 on a hole where he tried to hit a wood out of a side hill lie in the rough 3 times in a row and hit the ball out of bounds all 3 times. Now, then he started bitching with an official about the ball being inbounds or out of bounds. And the audio here is not great, but I want to play it anyway because he sounds like such an a-hole that to me, you got to play it. But this is DeChambeau bitching with the judge who was giving him the ruling on the ball that he hit out of play.
The boundary is it's touching the line.
The boundary is inside
you're kidding me. So you're saying that even though so if you had a white post right here, even if it was on the back edge of the post, so you're saying that I don't believe it. Can I get a second ruling, please? Thank you.
Sluggers
give me proper ruling.
Okay, now at the very end, and he can't really catch it, but you got to listen closely. He says he'd give me a garbage ruling, like always. Like always. So this guy, as we all know, is one of the big stories on tour right now, Bryson DeChambeau, who's put on 40 pounds, is swinging from his ass every time, and has added like 25 yards on average onto his drives. He's now one of the longest drivers on tour, and up until this past week had been hitting it accurately. But you know what happens in golf when you swing from your ass, Mike? You know.
Yeah, it ultimately doesn't go where you want it to go.
It goes crooked. This is why you don't swing from your ass, because the extra 10 or 15 yards that you gain from that final 10% actually doesn't work. It doesn't do you any good. When you swing from your ass, it goes crooked, let alone trying to hit it out of the rough with a wood and then bitching at an official. So do I think something shady is going on with DeChambeau, who, as you would say, has put on 40 pounds and is hitting the ball longer than he ever has? Yes, I do. Beyond that, I think he's another one who's cracking. This guy's losing his mind. Mickelson's losing his mind. These guys are having breakdowns on the golf course, and I'm starting to think that these guys are like kickers in the NFL. You change the whole thing up, you change the routine, because it's such a mental game that when things start to go awry, they can't handle it anymore. They completely have mental breakdowns.
Well, especially
Mickelson. Oh, Mickelson's cracking up because he can't keep the ball on the green. Again, one of the great wedge players in the world, or short game players in the world, at least at the height of his career. And now this guy, DeChambeau, also losing his mind, and he's cracking up like a candy bar you put in the freezer, man. He is cracking up.
Wow, the turf, that tour is soft. Soft, soft, soft. All right, I just want to close in the last minute here. Maz, you have a computer right in front of you, right? You can go online.
I do.
And so do you, Jim Murray, right?
I do.
Would you go to NBCSportsBoston.com, the homepage, and there should be a picture, front and center of Rafi Devers. It looks like going into second base, okay? Rounding first, maybe?
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
know. Okay. Maz, did you say before that you got scolded for saying that Rafi Devers might be out of shape?
Yes.
Look at that
Scolded is too strong a word, but people have said to me he's in the same shape he was in a year ago.
Look at that picture.
Yeah, I think he's carrying a few extra pounds. There's no question.
He's fat.
Yeah, he looks a little heavier than he did last year.
No, he's fat. That's fat. I'm sorry. That's not the same guy. That's not the same. That's not the same. It's not. It's not even close. He's heavy. And so, I mean, okay, it's baseball. Some guys can be heavy. No big deal. But, like, I used to get into this all. I don't know why this is, like, such a thing, but I'm with you, Maz. Like, when you call out a fat, who was it? It's Daisuke, Was it Daisuke that used to show up out of shape? Who was it? Was
another? Oh, more than one. They get a long line of people who showed up fat.
No, or maybe
wait, Manny?
No, it was. I thought it was Daisuke. Do they have another Japanese pitcher?
They had Okajima for a while, but he was a rail. He was skinny.
Anyway, whatever. I mean, I just remember looking at these. Or Beckett. I used to say it about Beckett all the time. Beckett would show up looking like he's storing nuts in his cheeks. He'd gain all – and I know I'm a fat face kind of guy. When I gain weight, my face gets fat. And that's what Beckett's does. And Beckett would show up with a fat face Beckett like he was storing nuts in his cheeks, right? He'd be fat. And you'd see it. He'd put on weight. Or I thought it was Daisuke. Maybe it was someone else. But it's like – and the Red Sox guys get so defensive about it. Like, why are you so defensive about this ball player's weight? Some of these guys show up out of shape. Devers is fat. I'm sorry. Devers is fat. That's fat.
He does. He looks big to me. So, again, I'm going by pictures. And, you know, I'm going to hear all this stuff about the odd angles. But the first video I saw of him playing third base, and it was like a shot from the roof boxes, so it wasn't the greatest angle, but I looked at his belly, and I said, he's got extra weight.
And I remember, I mentioned it to you during a commercial break one point last week. There was a tweet from Ian Brown, who covers the Red Sox for MLB.com, that said, Devers doesn't look sharp defensively in any way, shape, or form today. And that was 5 days ago.
Good job, Ian.
You look at that photo, and it's like, well, yeah, he probably can't even bend over.
He put on weight. That is heavy. And that's all. Doesn't mean anything more than that. But can we just call as we see it? When a guy puts on weight, can we say we put on weight? About the Red Sox writers circling the wagon? Why do they circle the wagon about the weight thing, Maz? You've just jarred something loose in me. They've always done this.
Yeah, and you know what? It's not just them. It's a sport. Like, there's a real sensitivity there that, you know, guys let themselves go. And you know why there's a sensitivity to it? Because it's true. That's why. Because it's true. A lot of guys do, particularly when they have time off like this. They, you know, they don't know when it's going to start up again. And this happened in 95 when they had the work stoppage and guys came in and they were out of shape because they don't take care of themselves until they have to.
So I tell you to put on the simulcast, but it's the same coming. Just go to the NBC Sports Boston homepage. So look at this picture of Rafi, running the bases. Heavy. That's all.
This is a 25-year-old guy, right?
Yeah. So there it is. Okay. There's that. We're going to come back with the final word, so don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And the final word is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you're looking for the best deal on tires, there's only one place to go. That's Town Fair Tire. The best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire.
Nobody, Jim.
Nobody.
Nope.
A couple of pieces of sound to get to in the final word today. We'll start with this. Despite the more powerful and costly internet connection, still some technical issues for Felger to start the show today. From his compound in parts unknown.
Okay. Is it me that sounds horrible or is it Maz that sounds horrible?
I think
we all sound horrible.
You sounded bad and you had this fuzz on Friday too.
I just had the cable guy out this morning.
You need to be grounded. Like, you're not grounded this way.
I got a brand new fancy modem with like boosted internet speed. I flip for it, Maz. You know me, I'm a little cheap, but I flip for the extra $25 a month.
How about a lot cheap?
And it sounds like this. It sounds like crap. God, that's so annoying. It doesn't sound good.
I think that whatever you just did was better, but now it's back.
Really? So
you're not grounded. I can tell. Like, what you need to
hold it. So when I hold it, it sounds better.
Yeah.
Oh, crap.
Yep, you're going to hold that piece of equipment the whole show.
I could have told you he wasn't grounded, Murray.
So when I...
See?
Yeah, what is that?
We're going to have to fly the engineers in. He seemingly fixed it, though.
So I popped the level down a little bit, and I put it down on the ground. So I think that tended to help matters.
All right. You got grounded. Very good.
Yeah, we'll see.
You almost swore there in retrospect.
Yeah, I wanted to. Technology. Can go F itself.
Well, we always have the occasional when hosts aren't listening. Today we had when hosts aren't on the same page.
Can I read you the part of the Reed story that stuck out to me?
Well, let me read it, and then you'll stop me and guffaw when I get
okay,
to it.
Okay, fine, go. Here's what Reed said. One of the three aspects of the past week at Gavin Green in Los Angeles, while throwing to newly signed pitchers receiver Demir Bird, among others, while Jerks Stidham and Brian Hoyer ran the opposite coast in Massachusetts, alongside starting Saturday Manders, throwing to receivers Bob Sanu and Darryl Olszewski, running back Damian Harris and rookie tight end Dalton Keene, among others. Reed's right to the doing session, shining spotlight on the most intriguing storyline of the 2020 game. The competition to become Tom Brady's replacement had a unique dynamic to their company. It's hard to top Ben Blanchard's career resume, writes Reed, but he has notable ground to make up compared to Stidham and Hoyer, with relationship building among the majority of teammates.
And knowledge of coordinator Josh McDaniel's system. Newton, I keep waiting for you to jump in. Newton began the process.
Okay, can we stop then? I'll jump in. Sorry, no. I was trying to be respectful.
No. I was waiting for the part that you wanted to highlight, and then you jump in.
Okay, no, you're not there. You're not there yet.
Okay,
but can I just say this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cluster.
It's a little clunky.
Yeah. True reentry Monday, that's all.
It is. COVID. That's what it is. And delays and all this, all these things of this nature. Okay, so that'll do that. We've got Adam Jones standing by. I can't see who's standing in the hallway there.
No.
Wrong.
No, it's the debut of the baseball reporters, Mike.
Oh, my God. What was I just – I teased it like eight times today.
Right.
And then I get to
seriously.
Like, what? Oh, my God, the baseball reporters.
Yup, we're back, bitches.
I can't wait. What do we got, Miz?
Okay, so there we go. The return of the baseball reporters. Obviously, there's a lot to catch up on from the offseason. So we're going to start with a big picture assessment of MLB and of the Red Sox. That's where we're going to start tonight. We have a bunch of things planned for the week, though, that I do want to lay off for the listeners as well. But it's a big picture kind of night with the game on the verge of returning here at the end of the week. So we'll start there.
Okay, here it comes. The return of the baseball reporters slowly grinding our way back to normal, and this will be one sign of it. Maz, 6 o'clock here on 98.5, the Sports Hub, getting you ready for the Sox. So that's next. No commercials, just a quick update from Murray, and then you got Maz. We'll talk to you tomorrow, everybody.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.